Sure, has three pieces on Purim, I think. But this is the shortest one. This is the one that we could do in a single sitting. It's a very, very beautiful piece, and I would say in a certain sense a very countercultural piece. You'll see what I mean in a second. So says the Ali Shor, he opens up this as follows. Yesh nisim shonim. There are different types of miracles. Yesh, some, this is the one that we're most familiar with. Mishapchim ha'tivim, kmo hayam la'basha b'kriyas yamsuf. They completely change over nature. They radically transform nature. They go against nature. For example, Kriyas Yamsuf. V'yesh nes galui shateva nishar al makomo. However, there is an opposite type of miracle, which is common in one way, but opposite in the other way. It's totally against nature, but not that you see nature being changed, but rather miraculously nature doesn't change when it ought to have. For example, makom ha'aron. V'hakruvim shlohechziku mida. According to the Gemara, it's an amazing miracle that when they were, you know, when you're cheshboning the space of the Beis Hamikdash or the Mishkan, you would have assumed you have to take away. When you move into a house, how big is the salon? And how much in the kitchen? How much room is there for the refrigerator? Right, you know, and then you measure. You go to the store. I love that couch, but it's not going to fit in the space. I love the refrigerator or the microwave, but it's not going to fit in the space. Says the Gemara, a miracle that the Aron and the Kruvim didn't take up space. I can't even. It's literally beyond human comprehension to understand what that means. But that's what the Gemara says. So says the Rav Obi, that's a miracle. On the one hand, it's as miraculous as Kriyas Yamsuf, but in the opposite direction, where according to the natural laws of science, something should have happened. In fact, it didn't. That's just the flip side, the mirror image of when something actually did change. So that's all one type of miracle. You know, divided, so to speak, into two. One case, you see the difference, but it's against nature. One case is against nature, you don't see anything at all. And then there's the third kind of miracle, he says. And that is... Another example of that second type of miracle is one that we often speak about on Hanukkah, the story with Rav Chanina Mendoza, where he talks to his daughter, and he tells her, don't worry, I know you only have vinegar, you couldn't afford to get oil, but don't worry, you light it, and it will light for Shabbos. After all, the same God who said that oil is combustible and flammable can say the same thing about vinegar, v'kachava. So on the one hand, it was obviously against the laws of nature. On the other hand, all you saw was a flame. It looked kind of normal. There was no actual oil. It wasn't Hashem made a miracle because an oil appeared. Everything stayed the same, but the fire lit. So that's kind of like the Aron not taking up any space in the Mishkan. But either way, they're both the opposite of the first type of miracle. However, he says here on the fifth line, v'yesh nes, but however, there is a third kind of nes which is completely different. Hanase legamrei. Then there are others which are completely in nature, using the currents and the tides of nature, not at all against nature, not changing the way things appear, not keeping things the same, even though naturally they should have changed. Everything is going naturally according to plan, but it works out exactly right. Exactly right, even though the odds of that are completely random. But yet Hashem made it happen that way exactly. And of course, that is, says Rav Obi, using a poetic term, Nes Kazeh HaKadosh Baruch Hu Legamrei Uman Mutzna. Right? He's like an anonymous author or the hidden hand of God, as we would say. That's kind of an English expression. That is to say, Shakol Mustar U'Bechol Zot Hu Nes Kaloi. But it's an absolute miracle. And that, of course, is the lead up to, this is the example par excellence of Purim. Purim is the ultimate Nes Nistar. Again, his point, just a subtle one, but I thought it was important even to start with this. Nes Nistar doesn't just mean like it happened in the Mishkan where the Kruvim or the Aron didn't take up space. That's actually a Nes Nigla, but in the opposite way we usually think of it. A Nes Nistar is where nothing had to be affected. Says the Maharal, he continues, and the basis of the whole piece is going to be the Maharal, Ki Nes Ze Hayakolkach Tsanua V'pnei Shehu Ba Mimakom Gavoa Ad Ma'od. This is why I say, by in a certain sense, and you see the whole theme of this is countercultural, right? We live in a world in which the more you can reveal, the more popular you can be, the more likes you can be, the more all sorts of other things you can be. That can be literally walking around, as my Bubby would have said, like a nakata mensch, a naked person. I can't even imagine if my Bubby was alive to see nowadays. This is 20 years ago she was complaining that people were walking around like nakata mensch. So she was old school and proud of it. But it's, you know, the whole, again, I'm not one of these people who thinks that everything on the internet is bad or all social media is inherently bad. But one of the things that is definitely bad about it, and I can think of numerous examples of people even that I know very well, People are transformed. Everything's voyeurism now. You have to show off everything. Here, look at the new shoes that I bought. Here, look at I went to the grocery store. As if people care. And evidently, even worse and sadder is that some people do care. So it gives every anonymous Joe and Jane an opportunity to become a celebrity. So the more you can reveal about yourself, so that's what we, so that's, that has cultural cachet, cultural currency, the way we live, right? So, but the Torah is countercultural. The hidden in the tzanua is something that is not only acceptable to us, it's actually considered of greater currency, of greater value. So says the Maharal, what is, again, these are abstract and metaphoric terms. How high a place would you expect the miracle of Kriyat Yam Suf to come from vis-a-vis Purim? Right? The average person would say, wow, Yam Suf is a greater miracle. It must be coming from, so to speak, a higher place up there, whatever that would mean. Says the Maharal, the miracle of Purim was so tsanua that it came from incredibly high place. Says, I'm not sure, I didn't look up this Maharal inside, so I'm not sure if this is a Ravolbi embellishing, or this was the Maharal himself made the point. Mi yodea. Who's to say that the Kriyas Yamsuf is a greater miracle? And now here, this is his first, this is, or maybe 1B you'll say, to me, I would star this. This is an incredibly insightful, powerful, powerful point, the next few lines here. Once you tell me that they're on the same level, so how come by Pesach it was an Eis Nigla split in the Yamsuf, and in Purim it was God's, the invisible hand of history? Every generation needs something different. And the miracle, and the nature of that miracle will correspond to the what God felt the nature, the generation needed. Right? The message of Pesach, which evidently in God's inscrutable wisdom, he felt the world needed at the time, was God is the boss. He's the boss. He's the author of nature. Therefore, he's the controller. He's the programmer. The programmer knows the code. He can pull the plug whenever he wants. He can change the code whenever he wants. He is the boss. How do you demonstrate that message to the world? Kriyas Yam Suf will do it. Right? God's in charge. And because that was the message that the generation needed, the miracle took that type of form. However, he continues, "Begolas paras umadai hayutzricham lomod ki a kadosh baruch hu hadon ha-historia uba upaal kefi ritzono." Completely different message in the generation of Purim. Not that God is the boss of nature, but that he's the author of history. That was the message. And therefore, the miracle, couldn't Hashem have made, I don't know, all of a sudden like an earthquake like Korach and Haman would have just walked into it? Okay, he could have done that. Why not? A lot of Nisim Guluyim Hashem could have done to save us in the time of Purim. So why didn't Hashem do it? Because that would have been besides the point. That message had already been communicated to the world in Pesach. Now Hashem is trying to give us a different message. And that is to realize that the natural events, and we're living through these very scary ones, don't ask me what God's message is, but the message of Purim is that there is a message. That the major events of world history, certainly of Jewish history, the major events of history, that God is the author of history. And therefore the way he demonstrated that was through the miracle of Purim, exactly through the events of politics and history, his ratzon being carried out. And Ravolbi, ends the paragraph by, again, reiterating the point, who's to say which miracle was greater? And he adds that there's some mystical tradition, don't ask me to explain this, that says that Moshe's neshama and Mordechai's neshama came from the same Shoresh. I don't know exactly what that means, but it certainly would illustrate his point on my level, I can understand, that what he means is, or one of the lessons of that idea is, that who's to say that all the miracles that Moshe did are so great, just because they would have gotten, they would have trended on Twitter. Right? Even the more tsanua ones, the things that people don't know about, could be just as great. Point number one. Point number two, we continue. Second paragraph. Hamaral b'sefer Or Chadash. That's the Maharal Sefer that's uniquely dedicated to Purim and based on the Megillah. Tells us, Magalalanu, Gamkein, Ketzad, Zachu, Mordechai, V'Esther, Lenes, Gavoa, Zeshel, Purim. So, if, as in the case of Yitzias Mitzrayim and that first generation of miracles, Hashem needed a shliach, a representative, someone to affect those miracles. And those miracles were the super duper incredible razzle dazzle thunder light show of the Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf, and Moshe was Moshe. That's why he got to be the leading man. So l'chora, one could ask, now that you're telling me, you've got me, you convinced me, Maharal, you convinced me, Rav Volbi, that the miracles of Purim are just as great or greater. So who is on the, you know, the banner? You know, back in the day, when there used to be something called movie theaters, and people actually used to go to movie theaters, right? There used to be this big, what's the word? You know,
screen private.
No, the big thing they have on the outside of the movie marquee. Theater, the marquee. Amazingly, the youngest guy in the room got it. So on the marquee, they would have the name, of the leading man, the leading woman, right? So Purim has that. We have a Mordechai, we have an Esther. Ask the Maharal. How come, of all people, Mordechai and Esther were Zocha to be the stand-in for Moshe? Why they got to be the ones who were the shlichim to bring to the world and bring to the Jewish people a miracle of such level? So he continues, exactly, Simcha. Exactly. Says the Maral, Hamida haruya l'neis zehirak tzniut. V'zot haita midatam shel Mordechai ve'Esther. Given that the whole miracle is a hidden miracle, Mida keneged mida, what's the characteristic that would make someone zocha to be the appropriate representative? You can think of this in like reward and punishment. I did a reward, I did a something, therefore I deserve a reward. Or you could think of it, lahavdil, again, if you were casting for a film, right? An action movie needs a certain kind of leading man or woman. And a romance or a drama needs sometimes a different actor, right? And you have the gedolim, who could do both. Okay, after the shiur and after we're done recording, we could give our votes for the best actors of the generation. I have my opinions, don't worry. Not for recording. Anyway, so even if it's not just a question of, oh yeah, Mordechai had a mitzvah, therefore we're going to reward him with this. I think it's more than that. It's what type of person would be the most fitting. Yes, the person needs to be great at it, but what's the it that we're looking for to be the representative, the vehicle, catalyst for a nace that is a hidden nace? Let's just finish the thought. So he says there, it's Mordechai and Esther. Why? And as he's about to demonstrate with a number of Mamari Chazal, Mordechai and Esther each excelled at Sneas. Yes, Nathan.
It's like
Gav
and Zechos Hayidei.
Well, that's how you understand that as a question. But yes, I think it's, again, that could just be a reward. But it also can mean, again, once you make yourself the kind of person who can do X, then you're the most fitting to do Y if that is similar to X. So just a few examples, we'll run through this particular paragraph. He points out that Chazal, in a number of places, even when it comes to the name Mordechai and Esther, coincidentally or not, and it's obviously not a coincidence, that's his whole point, illustrate that there's a connection to something that we would broadly include under the umbrella of Tznius. So for example, the Gemara Chulin says, Mordechai min haTorah minayin. What's a hint to the name Mordechai in the Torah? And the Gemara actually answers, it comes from Mar Dror, which is an ingredient that's part of the Ketores, and the Targum. Now, what does Mar Dror have to do with Mordechai? So they point out that the Targum of that Aramaic translation of Mar Dror is Mara Dachya. So that's two words, but if you say it fast, Mara Dachya sounds like Mordechai. Right? What is that? So as Rav Volbi explains, the Maral explains, Hainu Ketores. Now, the Ketores was this, kind of amalgam of multiple ingredients of spices that used to be burnt. But where did they burn this? So, on the most extreme example, Matir b'Yom HaKippurim l'fnai v'lifnim, in the Kodesh HaKadosh on Yom Kippur, in the most private place, as tenuas can be. And even the Ketores that we do on a daily basis, Kasher hayam Maktirin al Mizbech HaZahav Shebeheichal. But what happened once they lit, once the Kohen lit the Ketores? Everyone had to leave the room. Hayah Porshim min HaAzara, Sheha Ketores b'chashai. The Gemara says, "Yavo davar chashai v'yechapara al davar chashai hu lashon hara." The Gemara says that just like people typically, I don't know what it says about our generation. I think now people are very happy to gossip in public. But the Gemara says people used to gossip and spread lashon hara in private, whispering one person to another. You wouldn't do that in public. So too, the Ketores, which dafki is in private, no one is in the room. The second the smoke goes up, everyone has to leave the heichal. So that's so. Leave aside the connection to lashon hara. That's not our topic at all. But you see here that the Ketores and this idea that connects to Mordechai's name is something that's dafka hinted at by Tznius. Similarly, he continues, second half of the paragraph, Esther, the Gemara also, towards the bottom, I'm skipping ahead for a second, Esther min haTorah minayin, Aster Panim, right? The Esther comes from, that's the whole etymology of the name, God's hidden face. Or before that, the part that I just skipped, he points out a very amazing Gemara in Masechta Megillah, where the Gemara says, what was the zchus that led to Esther achieving this role? So the Gemara says, b'tzchar hatznius shahaisa bas Rochel. Shahaisa bar Rochel, right? Rochel was very tzanua when she ended up saving her sister Leah from humiliation under the chuppah, and she was willing to quietly see the spotlight initially, and as a result of that, she was zochah to have Shaul HaMelech as a descendant, u'b'schar tzniyas shahaisa bar Shaul, and there's a famous story with Shaul and David, where he was respected tzniyas, and as a result, zochah v'yatzas mimena Esther. Esther is an ultimate descendant of Shaul and Rachel, and the Gemara says it's all based on tzniyas. And then the Gemara points out, you know, this is, I guess, a proof for the idea that even though sometimes you have to wait a while, but tzaddikim don't have to worry. Eventually, their rewards will be their good deeds will be rewarded. But the point is, in all of these things, as he says here on the last line of the paragraph, "Begolosu haisa Hester betoch Hester, Begolos Madai betoch Od Haman Amalek Hester Kaful." Everything about that golos was, you know, the most, you know, they were hidden in the sense of being lost. Right, they were in a difficult galus, and within that galus, all of a sudden, you had an unexpected and hidden foe of Haman, who was, you know, I don't even know to what extent people knew it at the time, but you know, it certainly wasn't something, I guess, that he probably advertised. Also, unexpectedly, we find out that the second in command is from Amalek. Right, it's hidden. Everything is, you know, more and more on a literary level. There's a lot of, you know, everything gets, you know, so to speak, hidden and hidden and hidden more. And therefore, so what's the most appropriate way to counter that? Is the zchus of the tznius. And then he says the following, this will take us to the end, the bottom of the page. Hamaral magalonu devar amok. Kevin shabahaya bime haman, hayakan hester beto hester, lahaya ruilios hagoel rak Esther, shemora hashem al godol tznius. So that's the point, the maral, as we were just making. That because of the fact that the whole nature of the challenge was, right, you know, we needed someone who could play the role of the particular story. And this story, because it was a Hester story, needed someone whose personality was emphasizing tznius. She was tznius betoch tznius. Even in areas where she should have been public, she was tzanua. For example, as he can quote, lo mageret et molarata, right? Even in everyone else is being public about where they came from, even something like that, which everyone was talking about, she was very, very private and tenua about that. And therefore, higia tfilata gamkein el makom el yon hanistar. All right, and this is, again, all in the mystical abstract worlds, but what does it mean? Now he adds a different adjective to our understanding. We said before that the miracle of Purim came from a high place. So now he adds to that, which is, it's so high, we can't get to it. It's hidden. High also means hidden. So because of the challenge, the antidote to the challenge was Esther and Mordechai. As a result, we were zochah to a Yeshua that came from something very high and something very hidden. V'zeki kasher hayu Yisrael b'hastarat panim, ru'uy shiyah ha-goel otam gam hastarat panim mishyesh lo hamida ha-ru'uya l'zeh v'yatzniyat v'hezder kamo shahaya l'ester v'atzniyat v'kach Mordechai ha-nirmaz, as we just saw, his name hints at that. So this is his big second point, that the nature of the challenge was one that came from a hidden place, the darkness of Golus. As a result, Mordechai and Esther, who personified tznius, each in their own way, so they were the appropriate catalysts for the Yeshua. And now he makes a final point, which is also a little bit dialectical, and therefore really, really very fascinating. Hatznei Alech Hashem Elokecha. This is a Gemara in the Sukkah. On the one hand, the very famous Pasuk, I think I've said before in different contexts, when I was a kid growing up, my father always told me this is his favorite pasuk in Tanakh. Should walk modestly with God. But here, what is the Gemara Darshan on that? So you would have thought, what is Hatznei Alech Elokecha? Wear a long skirt. Don't show your face. Or whatever a person might imagine that would be for a man, right? Let's leave that. But none of that's what the Gemara says. What's Hatznei Alech Elokecha? Zuho tzas hameis vachnas zakala. Now, aside from the fact that you'd be randomly picked, a funeral, going to a funeral, helping it for a wedding, celebrating someone's wedding, but more than that, what are they both also? Incredibly public events. So the Gemara immediately knows that. The Gemara says, Halo dvarim kal vachomer, uma dvarim shedarkan lasot befar hesia, amra torah v'hatznei alechet, dvarim shedarkan lasot en betzina, al achat kama v'kamba. What's the point? So he explains, harei hatzina al alechet, Nemar, Hatznei Alechet, excuse me, Nemar, Alvarim Shabbat. Even things which have to be in public, you can do them in a tzenua way. Not even the public things can be done in a tzenua way. And the bigger point, and this is, I think, very much a take-home lesson for all of us, im yesh ba'adam tzniut. How do you know if you're a tzniut person? What's the litmus test? So it's, I think, obvious in a certain sense, very similar to what we would ask in a lot of other things, right? You know, am I a good davener or not? So it's one thing to daven in shul. Everyone's around, they see. If I can't get to minyan, I'm on vacation, I'm a place with no minyan, I'm in a hotel room in the middle of Minnesota or who knows where, do I still daven with the same kavana? If I do, so that's a litmus test that even the other stuff that I, right? I think it'd be kahane of a kahane examples, right? Certain people, they talk very, very nicely to their wife when other people are around. Could be a different person in private. So, does he know how to talk or doesn't know how to talk? The answer is, when no one's around, that's how you'll be able to tell. So says Revolbi, that's the lesson of this Gemara as well. The true test, if a person is tzanu or not, paradoxically, given we're talking about tzanius, is dafka b'inyanim shel pirsum. To be tzanua in your privacy of your own home, or even in the privacy of, you know, by yourself, I'm very tzanua. That doesn't say anything. But in a public environment, in something which is calling for publicity, to there be still tzanua and private and modest, that is the ultimate test. Im shamu mastir atzmo, then be'emet hu tzanua. Kasher eita malka, as now he refers to Esther. So how do you know she was really tzanua? And don't do with how long her dress was or not. Ain Esther Mageret Molarata of Ama. The fact that everyone was there lining up saying very publicly where they were from, the beauty queen, this is Mrs. Illinois, this is Mrs. Ohio, Mrs. whatever. And Dafka there, she didn't say anything of who she was. Zuhi Tzniut Betoch HaPirsum. And now he finishes up, and with this we'll conclude, a very interesting point, which he says, what's the message of Purim? What is the greatest Pirsum? Of all the mitzvahs, what is the one that's the most public by nature? The mitzvah of Pirsumei Nisa. Purim is all about publicizing the miracle. So is that anti-tzanua? The answer is no, that's the whole point. We have to go through our Purim experience in a tzanua way, because the message of Purim that we're trying to be mefarsem is the value of tznius. The idea that even God can be, just like He can be the author of history, God doesn't always need to be the marquee. On Pesach Hashem's on the marquee. He is the leading man, Kaviyachol. On Purim, right, they got a few anonymous actors, a few guys who are just looking to get their first break. You didn't even see anybody. No leading man. Of course, we know, right, Hashem is pulling the strings. So just like that's how Hashem interacted with us on Purim, so too the message that we're supposed to take is to understand and appreciate this value of being tzanua, of not needing the limelight, of being able to work quietly. Not what I would say here, what he's really defining tzanius is, not needing attention. There are certain people who are always looking to draw attention to themselves. That is the ultimate. Again, I'm not being mezalzel in the way people dress. That's also important. But to think that that is the limit, or that is the full exhaustion of what tzanius means, is absurd. It also would be one of the reasons why you would think that tzanius doesn't apply to men, which is also obviously not true. So there can be certain clothing issues that relate to men, but more importantly, what ultimately everything's about, whether it's women or men, clothing, it's really the deeper point, which is that we're not supposed to be looking to draw attention to ourselves. Sometimes we get attention, okay, but not to be looking to draw attention. And therefore, even, so you might say, okay, when I'm just going, you know, when I walk down the street to the Merkaz, or just to go shopping, I don't make a lot of noise to draw attention. Okay, that's something. But imagine there's some big event, and you're a very important role of that. So you have to do something in public. But even then, you find ways to, in whatever way possible, not draw any unnecessary. Sometimes it's necessary. But there's always things you could do more. There's always unnecessary attention you could draw to yourself. That, he says, is the ultimate message of Purim. And I think that is something that's very, very powerful. And again, the chizuk he gives us, that's the tzav hashah, so to speak. And the chizuk, which he ends with, and since we're living in dark days, it's good to have some chizuk, he says, is again, the people were living under a very, you know, Hashem was, so to speak, hidden. What does that mean, hidden? Not that Hashem wasn't watching. Of course Hashem was watching. But we couldn't feel Hashem in anticipation of the Purim. That was the golus. And yet, instead of, as he says on the last line, instead of being no-ish, instead of becoming desperate, we should realize that even through Hashem's tznius, in those moments, like in the Purim story, Gam bo yesh derech litkarev l'hafocha hester l'harat panim v'derech hi hatznius. It's dafka when it looks like God is Himself so distant, which means it's not that He's distant, He's just not calling attention to himself. God, so to speak, on his level is being tzanua. So the way to get close to Hashem, dafka, in that time, is also through the tznius. Again, that doesn't mean, just like we said previously, or I've said in other shurim, because you get turned on to the mitzvah of Lashon Hara, and you read it through a few books of the Chavetz Chaim, or you went to a Chavetz Chaim video on Tisha B'Av, so people say, therefore, I'm never talking to anyone again. That's it. No more talking. I'm leaving every WhatsApp group I'm a part of. I'm not going to talk to anybody. It's true, you probably won't speak Lashon Hara if you don't talk to anybody, but that's also not the answer. So the answer here also is not to withdraw completely and never be involved in a community. Or the answer is no, but never look for unnecessary attention. That's the meat of tznius, and that is the lesson, he says, at least part of the maral, of the holiday of Purim. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.